Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good morning. Who's ready to rock today? Woohoo! Okay, put your hands up if you had a green juice this morning. How many of you have had one cup of coffee? How many of you have had more than one? All right. Are you ready to go? Yes. Okay, so my name is Arlene Peterson. I'm an executive Toastmaster in Tucson. Woo-hoo. And I have a warning. I really have had a green juice and two cups of coffee. Well, I'm very, very excited to be here this morning. I want to start by welcoming our executive distinguished leadership team. The parliamentarian today, distinguished Toastmaster, Jeff Maroud. Where's Jeff? Stand up, Jeff. Where is Jeff? It's Jeff, stand up. Oh, he's at the credentials desk. I thought he was just being modest. Hoy. All right. Administration Manager, Distinguished Toastmaster, Eddie Davis. All right. I love it. I love it. That is exactly the kind of energy I want to see. Like, you have had as much as I have in terms of good juice this morning. Finance Manager, Distinguished Toastmaster, Peter Salazar. Peter, where are you? Okay. Well, we'll give them some love from afar. Does anyone feel like the room is a little chilly? I'm thinking that they actually took the Toastmaster, like the Table Topics contest speech topic to heart somehow. Do you feel like that? I feel like the air conditioning gods were listening. All right. Public Relations Officer, Distinguished Toastmaster, Martha Brock Leffridge. Martha! Yes. Martha, you're awesome. You're so awesome. Club Growth Director, Distinguished Toastmaster, Michael Holian. All right. Program Quality Director, Distinguished Toastmaster, Christina Bencuccinini. I totally said that wrong. I think we need to give her an extra bit of love because I did not pronounce your name just before I looked at this. Thank you for being patient. It's all good. District Director, Distinguished Toastmaster, Enid Moore Cranshaw. Let's give Enid some love. Woo-hoo. Yes. I love that. Let's really give everybody some love this morning. Everybody some love. I wanted to just do a few quick ground rules, housekeeping rules this morning as well. Has everyone got their phones off? Yes, for sure. Okay. The second part is that during the speeches, we're going to hold the space for the speakers. Does anyone know what that means? Hold the space? Hold a container? Well, what that means, if you think about what a container is, it holds something, it keeps everything intact. So by holding the space, we can hold the space as speakers and really create the energy to include everybody in the room. But as listeners, we can hold the space by being really attentive in our seats. That means that if you need to leave the room, do it when there's applause or something like that. But let's really give, especially our guest speaker this morning, Patricia, let's really hold that space to be able to get as much juicy goodness because we know she's bringing a lot. So let's do that. I want to introduce this morning's inspiration next, and it's Valerie Mensch. Come on up, Valerie. Oh, sorry. That's a typo. I didn't think I had a last name you could mess up.
It says Mensch here, but I just got new glasses, so.
I don't even have my readers on, so I can't tell you what it says. Good morning, everyone. When I learned about the theme of our conference, Blazing a New Path to Success, it got me thinking. By show of hands, how many of you already consider yourselves a success? Oh, look at that. That's pretty awesome. That's almost the whole room. But what definition of success did you use? So let me throw some out. How many of you didn't kill any houseplants this week? Oh, yeah, look at that. Some fellow brethren. I love it. How many of you used, I am an amazing parent as a definition of success? A few of you. But the rest of you must have used the traditional career financial definition of success. Is that correct? I think those of us who didn't raise our hand probably used that sole definition, the financial career definition of success. And I think it's so important that we broaden our horizons when we think about success. If you have one, two, or more, like I do, rescued animals at home who are now healthy and thriving, you're a success. If you are a parent and your child is happy and healthy, teenagers excluded, you're a success. If you're a teacher and every day you go to work and create and light fire in a child who therefore someday will be a success, you are a success. So let's try this one more time. Show of hands, now using all the definitions we just gave and then any others that are your own, how many of you are a success? That's better. Now, I would like to bring up the esteemed, fabulous, and reason that I am here this morning, our district director, Miss Enid Moore Crenshaw.
You're welcome. I am so pleased to be here this morning, and today my heart is full because we have a conference that is quite amazing, and everyone has a smile on their face. But yes, I'd like to thank you for coming to the 2018 Spring Conference and also making sure that you're a part of it, because this is a special time because we have Patricia Fripp. And I ask, how often have you watched a speaker captivate an audience? Was it compelling content, their dynamic delivery? Did their message speak directly to you? How often have you been that speaker? After Patricia Fripp's presentations, you will understand how to be that speaker. Every time. In 1975, Patricia joined Cable Car Toastmasters. Since then, she has keynoted 4 international Toastmasters conventions. She is a Hall of Fame keynote speaker, executive speech coach, and sales presentation skills expert. Meetings and Conventions magazine named her one of the 10 most electrifying speakers in North America. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine wrote that the 6th best way to invest in your success is to learn presentation skills from Patricia Fripp. With FrippVT.com, her interactive online presentation skills training, Patricia Fripp's coaching is available everywhere and anytime. To discuss under the magnifying glass good to great presentations, please welcome Patricia Fripp.
It must be the juicy goodness. Obviously, you like the bling. Add a fascinator and most of us are ready to go to the royal wedding. Now, if you had met me in 1975, when I first joined Cable Car Toastmasters, you would have seen a hairstylist. I was San Francisco's number one men's hairstylist. And if you had worked in the financial district, being a mover and shaker that you are, you would have sat in my chair. And I loved being a men's hairstylist, mostly because I loved my clients. Never forget the first time I met Larry Mariottini. It was 10:45 on a Tuesday in 1972. I walked into the lobby of this very she men's hairstyling salon where I worked, and there he sat looking most uncomfortable. Someone had said to him, "You need Miss Fripp." He didn't know if he needed Miss Fripp, but he was there. Larry Mariottini was a computer programmer for Levi Strauss. I guess you might say Larry was a nerd long before I knew what one was or dreamed I would want to grow up and be one. I took him back to my booth. I shampooed, conditioned, cut, styled, sprayed, and fluffed his hair. He looked good. He didn't know if he looked good, but he looked good. He walked out of my salon with a bag of shampoo, conditioner, hairspray, hairbrush, never spent much money in a barbershop in his entire life. And he went back to work at Levi Strauss. And all the women said, "Larry." He went home that night and his wife said, "Larry." Well, you imagine, after a few days of this positive response, he thought, well, he did look good. And as what usually happens when you change one aspect of your life or appearance or presentation, it has a tendency to spread. Larry became a regular client and was motivated. He started working out, trimmed down, bought some trendier clothes, and acted in a more outgoing way. So much so that Levi Strauss offered him a sales position, even though he had no prior sales experience. Larry Mariottini was such a good salesperson, they cut his territory 5 times, and he still sold more than everybody else. Now, I know what you're thinking. This Fripp woman wants to take full credit for transforming that man's life. Getting him a better pay job and, shall we say, more attention at home. Well, obviously, Larry had something to do with it. But consider this. Every day when I went to work as a hairstylist, I could have looked at my job one of two ways. Either I have 16 heads of hair to cut, or as I chose to, I have the opportunity to positively impact 16 people's lives. And when we do our job from the point of view of the service we can be to others, not only in my case was I likely to develop clients for a lifetime, I certainly received a lot more joy and satisfaction from my job. Now, of course, I have a different job. And I certainly take my responsibility to you equally seriously to perhaps give you some ideas that could positively impact your presentations. And you know, if when you can, even as a seasoned speaker, if you can bring some fresh air, a new technique, a new idea, a new opening into your presentations, you fall in love with speaking all over again. One morning, I opened my email, and the email said, "Dear Patricia, I'm a big fan of yours. May I interview you for my blog?" Well, I don't know about you, but I am a short-term project person. And I was working on a long project designing my online learning. And I was doing my very best to not be distracted. So I was about to send an email that said, I'm honored, I'm flattered. I would certainly love to be interviewed, but I'm busy now. Can you contact me in 3 months? And before I hit send, I thought, well, I might as well check his website. I picked up the phone and said, now that you know how dreadfully shallow I am, what is an Emmy Award-winning TV interviewer and game show host being my fan? Well, naturally, he had a 30-minute interview, and at the end he said, Patricia, that was great information. I got enough for 4 or 5 blogs, but come on. Tell me, what's your number one secret for delivering a powerful, persuasive presentation? I said, oh, there's no one secret. And then it hit me. And I realized a brand new frippicism was about to fall flawlessly from my lips. I said, although there is no one secret, if there were, it would be that your subject is of interest to your audience. You are an unusual audience. In other words, you paid your money, you inconvenienced yourself, you might have got up earlier, come in last night. You would not be here unless you chose to and wanted to be here. So for me, that's cheating. Because a lot of the circumstance you speak in, people are sent there. In other words, it's, we brought in this trainer, this speaker, she's going to fix you. And you walk in and their arms are folded. Now, let's say in most circumstance, it is somewhere between I'm there because I have to be and I'm delighted to be there. Most of the time, it's somewhere in the middle. But what is the secret to connecting to your audience and make them interested in your presentation? It is to speak as an audience advocate. Look at your presentation from their point of view. And one way you can do that is to watch the I versus you balance or ratio. So, for example, rather than saying, I am going to talk about, turn it around and say what you will learn, what you'll experience, what we hope you will take away to implement is. And I recommend this is true not only when you speak, whether you speak to 5 people, 15, 50 or 500. The principles are the same. It's also the same if you're writing. So, for example, you might want to write an email. Just what you want to communicate and then look back. And rather than say, I am sending you, it might be you will soon be receiving or you will find attached. Always make it as much you focused as possible. Will you speak and not say I? Of course not. However, be aware of looking at your presentation with the audience in mind. And
thank you. I have to tell you, I'm both challenged and excited. My excitement is I get a chance to give something back. My challenge is the shortest seminar I usually do is 50 hours. And I'm not exaggerating. I do weekends, and what I do more than that, obviously, coach people, but I'm into immersion, because how'd you learn language? You didn't learn it by just learning principles. You got in it, and you did it so often that it became real. And the bottom line of why I'm here, besides being crazy mofo, is that I'm really in a position, I'm not here to motivate you, obviously, you don't need that. And a lot of times that's what people think I do, and it's the furthest thing from it. What happens though is people say to me, well, I don't need any motivation. And I say, well, that's interesting, that's not what I do. I'm the why guy. I don't know why you do what you do. What is your motive for action? What is it that drives you in your life today, not 10 years ago, or are you running the same pattern? Because I believe that the invisible force of internal drive activated is the most important thing in the world. I'm here because I believe emotion is the force of life. All of us here have great minds. You know, most of us here have great minds, right? I don't know if I'm in the category, but we all know how to think. And with our minds, we can rationalize anything. We can make anything happen.
In all fairness, Tony Robbins is obviously, arguably, the most famous, the most successful, the richest professional speaker probably in the world. In fact, if we had his money, we'd throw ours away. And you could take anybody's 1 minute, first 1 minute of a presentation, find ways to improve, obviously. But to illustrate the point that we are making is to make your presentation more you-focused than I-focused. I think this is a good example. So, for example, if you are used to speaking in 50-hour seminars when people are coming to see you, you own the audience before they get there. And you find yourself in a 12, 15, or 18-minute TED Talk speech where the audience would be there whether you're on the program or not because there were multiple speakers. You might be a great speaker. You might know your subject. However, you need to restructure your presentation for that length speech. Obviously, I'm not Tony's speech coach. However, perhaps you would agree that his opening was probably halfway through that first minute. See, I would recommend that he might walk out and say, why do you do what you do? What drives you? What is your motive? You see, start there. Everything else is waffle. With a short presentation, get to the point fast. Make it about them. And self-deprecating humor is fine. However, it can backfire. And can you notice, when talking about great minds, he swallowed, oh, can't put him in that category. If you're considered a world expert in your subject, in that case, that was not the time to be self-deprecating. And I maintain he wouldn't have swallowed his words because he realized. So that is, in my opinion, the best example of not really focusing on the best way to connect to an audience in a short presentation. There are four ways that we're going to look at putting the techniques and the words under the magnifying glass to make your presentations even better. So one, we've looked at how do you connect? How do you just simply use you-focused language? How do you look at your point of view from the audience? Then how do you open with impact? First 30 seconds, last 30 seconds have a great impact. Stories. We all know we love stories. And if you have a short presentation, a five-minute talk, you have an idea what's the story that reinforces what you're saying. And then specificity builds your credibility. The world is turning into sloppy speakers. I am on a crusade and failing miserably. So I'm recruiting you to help me with my crusade to make presentations more specific. And of course, all these principles work if your audience is five people or 500. Now, I notice you're taking notes, and so early on, I'm telling you, if you go to fripp.com/handouts, there is a lot of information that is general, which is opening lines, speech structures, and then there'll be a drop-down menu. You go to this event, and you will have a PDF of all the slides. All right? So take your own notes, yes, but there's everything you will hear me say and more on that website. Also, you give me card or your name and email later. I have a weekly subscription sending out just speaking advice, very short, a video and a paragraph, but just to keep you. And also, I have a Facebook group focusing on presentation skills. If you want to join, I will let you in. Right. So just so you know, get that out so you don't hurt your wrist taking notes. All right, come out punching. Most professionals are fine once they get started. And of course, a lot of my work is with engineers and leaders and not necessarily Toastmasters, brilliant people. And without exception, when they bring me in, they say, I've got the framework of my presentation. How on earth do I open and conclude? So that we will certainly focus
Welcome on. Welcome to You Have Choices, Options of Openings, the Techniques. As you soon will come to discover, our subtitle is How to Open Your Presentation with Impact. At the beginning of a speech, presentation, seminar, client meeting, report to senior management, sales presentation, or any manner of presentation you deliver, you need to arouse interest in the subject. After all, we stand in the rain to see a movie. Would you stand in the rain to listen to your presentation?
So let's give you a few techniques that can increase the likelihood of that happening. You could start with a question. And with a show of hands, have you ever or do you regularly start your presentation with a question? All right. Who would like to? She looks so elegant. Now, be aware. Now, I certainly did not do that on purpose. However, if anything happens like that, if it doesn't bother you, it won't bother the audience. But you notice I must have done something like this before because I have an ad lib ready. Okay. An opening with a question. Where's a hand? You had one. All right. What is it?
In my speech this morning, I said, how many of you already consider yourself a success?
Good. That's good. When you do this again, you might say, there's a secret. And there are times you can address an audience. If you want to make an emotional connection, work on the principle that everyone's more interested in themselves than anyone else. Now, we have a certain camaraderie that some groups won't have. But you might say, raise your hand if you consider you're a success. And then everyone hears, she's talking to me. Now, does anyone, another one? Did I see another hand? Yes, sir.
My question would be, when was the last time you really felt that you were a good parent?
Okay, good. When was the last time you felt you were a good parent? All right, good, good. Another one? Shout it out, sir. Okay. Now, that's good. What I would recommend is while driving in this city, and if you want to talk to everyone, that's fine. How many of you have lost a tire to a pothole? Because the pothole is the punch word or the punchline, not the in the city. Now, there's another question, and that is people often say, see, I got up without tripping. Have you ever stood up to deliver a presentation and forgotten what to say? Now, if you use the formula, have you ever, I'm going to suggest you add a different word. How often have you stood up to deliver a presentation and forgotten your opening lines? Because the point is, if this is a situation that occurs more than once, I need your advice. See, if you said, have you ever? Oh, yes, I lived through it. Well, I don't need your advice. So just by reinforcing, this might not happen every day or every week, but it has happened. It probably will happen. I need your advice. Just the change of one word. How about a story? And of course, we're going to have a whole segment on stories. But there are principles with stories. So just as a matter of interest, what was the name of my hairstyling client? Can you remember what day of the week I first met him? What year? What time of the day? What did Larry do for a living? When he walked in, what did the women say?
Larry.
How many times did they cut his territory?
Five.
A story is a great way to welcome an audience into your presentation. If you think back to my opening, because you were exceptionally generous. I don't know when with your registration they gave you instructions, make sure you really cheer and applaud and perhaps stand up for Miss Fripp, which was very nice of you. But what did I say at first? No, that was next, but it was juicy. And it was, you gave, but it was, that was a wonderful phrase. It was, no, but it was deliciously juicy. Wasn't it deliciously juicy? I love deliciously juicy. You know, the older we get, the more we're going to take these. Yeah. Deliciously juicy. So that was a callback. And then, of course, bling, especially with the royal wedding, getting up at 5 to get ready. I got to see some of it. All right. And then good. So there are ways you can be aware of doing a callback or acknowledging the situation that's happening this day, if not all the audience is familiar with what's going on. So a story. Let's see. An interesting statistic or little known fact. Probably in many of your presentations, especially if you deliver more technical presentations for your job, there are very interesting details and statistics perhaps in the body of the speech. Now, you're nodding. Do you give technical presentations? Perfect. See, I'm going to walk down slowly. I noticed Megan as she was walking down with all that dress. She was going very gingerly. All right, so give me Teddy. So stand up here. What is an interesting statistic that you've delivered recently to your senior management?
One interesting statistic that I've delivered to my senior management is the fact that many a times whenever we do our SIT and UAT testing, we expect a lot of our designs to be right on the mark on the first go round. But a lot of times it has to go through several iterations.
Okay. All right. Now, what I want, Teddy, is I want to come up with a statistic. So this is all good. But I want to come up with the fact or the statistic that comes out of that. Can you think of?
So quantify, more of a quantifying statement?
Yes.
Okay. So out of 10 iterations, we were able to make major strides by having UAT testing succeed by 90% on the first round.
Okay. That's what I want. So I am going to say, wasn't that good? Especially thinking on your feet. Now, just for you to know, in part two of our session, this is all we're going to do, is get people to come up and deliver an opening line for mini coaching. That's the part two. Now, what I'm suggesting to Teddy and any other presenter is if you have an interesting statistic or little-known fact that is in the body as an opening to get their attention, to prove that you are more creative than other people in your position reporting to them, you might want to add an emotion. In other words, you could say, it might surprise you to know that
out of the UAT testing, we were 90% successful on the first try.
See? Very good job. Thank you, Teddy. So it could be, would it interest you to know? Would it surprise you to know? Would it amaze you to know? Would it horrify you to know? Would it disgust you to know? Depending on what you're talking about. But try that opening with a statistic next time you talk to your management. Okay? Good. Now, one of my all-time favorites, because Imagine when people are reading a program, they're always saying, huh, who's this? Well, I mean, that, we always have to take in consideration, based on the circumstance we're in, what are people thinking before they get in? And I was booked to speak to 350 Seventh-day Adventist pastors. The subject was how to design and deliver a more charismatic sermon. So I can imagine even a generous audience would think, huh, she's the only person on the program who isn't a minister. How can anyone who isn't a minister tell me how to write a better sermon? I write one every week. I bet she isn't even a Seventh-day Adventist. They would be generous enough to believe that someone on the program committee thought she had something to offer. But you understand, if you can start with an interesting statistic from their world, not yours, you can build your credibility fast. So in that case, I walked on stage and said, 465 times in the Bible, it said it came to pass. It did not say it came to stay. And unless your sermon is well constructed, artfully crafted, and charismatically delivered, it will not come to stay in the hearts, minds, and lives of your congregation. If you have never heard 350 pastors say amen or hallelujah after your opening line, that's even better than Toastmasters. Because they didn't expect it, nor did I. Now, my point is, I knew exactly how I was going to open before my foot hit the stage. If there is only one part of your presentation you script and you know exactly what you're going to say, it should be the first four or five lines. Because that is when you're going to be more nervous, even as a seasoned professional. Then there might be a statement. Now, a statement might be your opinion. Never ceases to amaze me that intelligent, well-educated people frequently overlook developing the number one skill that is guaranteed to position them ahead of the crowd, namely developing the ability to stand up and speak eloquently with confidence, or at least stagger to their feet and say anything at all. So it could be a quotation. I am famous for saying, don't keep quoting dead white men. Now, dead white men have some amazing quotations. However, so does your grandmother, so does your first boss. So you can also make them personal. Although, what I now do, whenever possible, I try and make every business trip a vacation, even if it's only half a day. I was in Washington, D.C., and I Googled within my zip code, was there a museum I could walk to? And a mile and a half away was Woodrow Wilson's house after he was president. And Woodrow Wilson had a great quote that I think is very appropriate for us in Toastmasters. He said, I use not only all the brains I have, I use all the brains that I can borrow. And I promise you, all the advice that you might receive from me in any format that you ever do, obviously is part of my experience, but it's also from all the brains who have helped me. And that is the value of having a camaraderie in Toastmasters and our own internal company teams. You are benefiting from more brains than just your own. It's very difficult to be creative in isolation. Now, transport the audience. Now, you can transport the audience to the past, or you can transport them in the future. So I transported you to the past. If you had known me when I first, in 1975, so I am, it's my story, but I'm including you in my story by transporting you back. If you had known me, or if you had met me in 1975, now I do realize most of you weren't born, a couple of you were, but most of you weren't born in 1975. Stories. Robert McKee, the screenwriting teacher, said stories are the creative conversion of life itself into a more powerful, clearer, more meaningful experience. How often have you sat in an audience and been mesmerized by a speaker? Was it their compelling content? Were their stories scintillating? Do they have the ability to reach out and grab you in a way you thought, wow, the speaker is talking just to me? Be honest. How many life-changing, career-building, or awe-inspiring presentations have you heard? Have you ever been that speaker? What would it mean to you and your career if you had that ability? I guarantee if you've heard a good speech, sermon, or business presentation that you enjoyed and remembered, at least one reason that made it memorable was the stories. Everybody loves a good story, and that is part of their power. No matter what our culture, we grow up feeling that hearing a story is somehow a reward. Stories are how we learn values and our family's legacy. When we're in school, stories make history come alive. In business, we quickly discover that stories help us explain complex issues and are the best way to connect to coworkers, customers, and audiences of all sizes and makeup. Wise leaders, managers, sales professionals, professional speakers, consultants, trainers, in fact, anybody with ambition who wants to make a difference will do well to develop an arsenal of great stories. These stories will provide clear, dramatic examples. No matter what position or level you find yourself, good stories help differentiate you from your competition. Good stories that are interesting, memorable, and illustrate your message can inspire and motivate, train and teach, convince and persuade. And nobody can resist a good story well told. If you're in sales, telling a story about a happy, satisfied client. If you are explaining technical issues, Teddy, to a senior management that isn't as technical, you paint a picture of what's going to happen if they say yes to your recommendation. Or you tell a story of the disaster that your team has managed to avert because of your work. Stories are a great way, and we all see stories. We see them differently. And one way you can improve your stories is, one, you are going to populate your stories with flesh and blood characters that other people can relate to. And this isn't always stories about you. My opening story, yes, I was there, but it was mostly about Larry. And certainly we are going to use personal stories about our life and our experience, but you can't always be the hero of your stories. You need other heroes. And there is a way to deliver your stories so that your audience can see them better. I was at a National Speakers Association chapter, brought a young woman up, just like we're going to do in the second session. And she said, my dad walked into a diner, looked at the waitress, and thought, that's my wife, in 1946. I said, I know this is a great story, but you have to present it in a slightly different way. You need to start within 1946. You need to put the story in a context. It's very important that you knew I was a hairstylist, but it was in my past. I don't want you to be thinking, oh, does she still cut hair? I wonder what she thinks of my hair. Oh, no wonder her hair looks good. I don't want to distract. I want you to know when this was. Because you do not have to be born in 1946 to know that was the end of World War II. You've heard stories from your parents and grandparents. You've seen movies. You've read books. You have an idea. And also, because you've seen movies and been to theme restaurants, the idea of what the diner looked like changed. Now, we see our stories, but if you say to me, in 1946, my dad walked into a diner, I don't know about you, but I see him in uniform, I think he's a soldier. Raise your hand if in your version he's a soldier. Now, I don't know about you, but I have an emotional connection to anyone who serves our country in any branch of the armed forces. And in movies, they call this a rooting principle. You are rooting for this character to get the girl or win the war or find who killed his partner. So I already like this man because he served our country. And because he's alone, I think he walked in, he sat at the counter and he looked at the waitress. And I know what she looks like. Now, we all have a different picture of what the waitress looks like. But I know she's probably got a little cap on and a penny over her dress, and she's wearing thick, wrinkly sole shoes because she stands up 8-10 hours a day and keeps smiling. And I bet she says to him, "Would you like some pie and coffee, honey?" And he thinks, "That's my wife." Now, you understand, all she changed was, in 1946, my dad walked into a diner, looked at the waitress, and said, "That's my wife." Everything else, we fill in the blanks, because it's presented in an order of who, when, where, who, what happened. And also, even if it's as simple as Larry, "Oh, would you like some pie and coffee, honey?" You don't report on the dialogue, you deliver the dialogue. You have quotation marks around it. Your characters speak. And you can add a lot more drama and emotion when your characters speak. Because you can deliver it the way they would have said it. Now, we have another principle. So let us do a quick review. To take good presentations and make them great, one, you are going to find ways to make an emotional connection to your audience. And one simple way is to watch your you-focused versus I-focused language. Two, you're going to open your presentation in a way to arouse interest in your subjects. And you've heard a handful of different suggestions. In the second session, we'll see how you do it and see if we can tweak it. The third way is, of course, to make your stories even more powerful. And one of those ways is the when was it, where was it, who was it, what happened. And of course, in the course of a speech, it was what is the result of that story. And you are going to make sure that your characters that the audience can relate to, that not necessarily you, they speak. We hear their words. The next principle, specificity builds credibility, we will pick up in the next session because we want to keep you on schedule. Now, if you liked what you have heard so far, you are going to love the second session. And if you can imagine, if you were locked in a room with me for 2 days with the best techniques, which you can't be, but you will find my able helpers on a table outside that'll be here all morning. You can take home a 2-day speaking school on CD and 3 DVDs on opening, structuring, and putting it all together. That would be very, and then I, of course, am going to see you a little later. However, as important as all these principles are, it's very important to remember. It's more important to be personable than perfect. As nitpicky as I am with what you say and how you say it, if the audience likes you, if you obviously schmooze with them, you have them in mind, you are a nice person, because the very fact that you can stand up in front of a room or on a stage and be halfway eloquent, they hold you in a certain esteem. So it's much more important that they like you off the platform or the front of the room as much as on. Be personable rather than perfect. And then remember your last words linger. And here's a technique I've been using for years. See if this can work for you. I hope you will remember me, Fripp. However, much more important than remembering me, remember what Fripp stands for. Frequently reinforce ideas that are productive and profitable. At a conference, one of my friends afterwards said, I love what you did with your name, Fripp, but mine is Hershkowitz. And would you believe a speaker came up later and said, Sue, I've got an acronym for Hershkowitz. It's tougher to remember, but he got the words that make sense for us. So with that, look forward to seeing you in part two. Enjoy your workshop. You might, now you'll see there's a sheet on your seat. If you want to take Fripp home, you fill in the information, hand it to my able assistants. So your name, your credit card number, we put it in a folder. No one will ever see it. So with that, do I hand this back to you? Oh, good. I won't go anyone. Another woman with juicy goodness. We are the juicy goodness twins. Yes.
This morning, no less. Wow.